So we're continuing the series strong. And we still got our cool logo up there. That was me when I was younger. My hair color's changed a little bit, but that was me. We talked last week about a guy who was not strong. At least, he didn't see himself as strong. And all of his characteristics didn't point to the fact that he was strong. But when the angel came to him, he said, "Oh, mighty man of valor, the Lord is with you." And we were talking about Gideon, right? And he said, "Man, not only am I in the lowest tribe of my people, but I am also the lowest in my family. And like, I am nothing." And we actually find him, when we find Gideon, we find him in the wine press. He's down in the wine press threshing wheat when he should be up on the hill, but he's so afraid of the Midianites that he's cowardly and he's down, he's hiding out in the wine press. And here the angel comes and says, "Oh, mighty man of valor." And we talked about he was a judge, right? And we talked about the fact that the judges are not necessarily those guys in the black gowns with the gavel that sit up behind a bench and make rulings on people. You got to kind of get that out of your mind. The judges that we're talking about here, the term is actually more closer to like a deliverer, somebody that's going to rescue somebody. That's the kind of judge we're talking about. And Gideon was one of those judges. But he was like a cowardly guy, right? And he kept asking God, "God, make sure I'm on the right path. I need a sign from you. I need you to show me that I'm doing the right thing." He kept asking him those things because he was cowardly and timid and weak and all those things. But you know what? What's the story of Gideon? Is God was able to use him. And the beautiful part is God is able to use all of us. I don't care how timid and weak you are. I don't care how much you think you can't. All it requires is obedience to God, and He can show you that you can. Listening closely to Him and following His path for your life, that's all it requires. It doesn't matter if you're a coward and you're weak and you're afraid of everything. God even went on to strengthen Gideon by dwindling his army down. Remember, it went from 32,000 down to 10,000, down to 300. And he said, "Okay, good, we're down to 100 men. This should be great. These people that used to like beat up on us and be the big bully to us and steal all of our grain and beat up on our people, now we got to go to war with them. And what are we taking into battle with us? We're taking some trumpets, we're taking some pots, and we're going to take some torches. Yes, sign me up. I'm on board with that. 100 of us carrying pots and torches and some trumpets. Yes, let's go to battle. I'm ready." And what happened? God delivered them. God delivered the people of Israel. This is in a period of time where the people of Israel are going back and forth between they're following God and they're doing the right thing, and then all of a sudden they're not. And when they fall away from God, God passes judgment on them and says, "Okay, I got to bring you back in line, so I'm going to send somebody to persecute you for a while." And that's what He does. And God continues to rescue them back again, sends them a deliverer, a judge to rescue them back, because God is faithful in His word, and He says, "You're my chosen people. I'm going to take care of you. So even though I got to pass judgment on you and you got to deal with coming back into line, I'm still going to save you. I'm not going to let you be wiped out because you're still my people." Oh, it's so good to know. It's so good to know that man, even though I mess up all the time and I get over here and I'm way off course and I don't know where I'm going, I feel like I got no chance at all, God may send something into my life to correct me, to get me back on the right path, but at least He says, "I do that because I love you. I do that because I want you to be the way I created you to be originally. I want you to be that new creation. I want to restore the joy of your salvation. I want you to be that man or that woman that I called you to be." It's going to be painful. No, it's not going to be very easy sometimes. But I will deliver you. I will judge you. I will bring judgment into your life, but I will deliver you. That is so good to know. It's scary. True. Yes. Terrifying. Yes. But definitely good to know. That once you're His chosen people, you're His chosen people, and He will take care of you. So we got this one guy, Gideon, we talked about 2 weeks ago, that, you know, cowardly, timid, didn't know what he was doing, said he was the least of the least, and there's no way I'll be any good to God. And God used him. Now we got to go to the big guns. We got to go on the opposite end of the spectrum and go over to Samson. And I didn't mean to point at Cedric when I said that, but if any of y'all saw the Bible series on the History Channel, you know what I'm talking about. Every one of y'all in this room probably thought of Cedric when you saw Samson. I know that I did. I was like, they done recruited Cedric to be in the Bible series. That's awesome. But anyway, we're going to talk about a guy who was on the opposite end of the spectrum from Gideon. This guy was like, whereas Gideon thought he was of no use for anything, Gideon thought that he could do anything. He didn't see that there was any limitations to what he could do. He was strong. He was mighty, and he was also an idiot in a lot of ways. He really was. He was this man that was full of anger. His common response to everything was just to fly into fits of rage and just act like a fool. Does anybody ever feel like that themselves? I know I do. There are times when I think, well, I know this is not the valid response for me to fly into fits of rage and be angry and all this kind of stuff, but you just can't help yourself. And then you have this sense of remorse after the fact. You're like, well, there's no way that God can use somebody like me, somebody that would use anger in that way, that would just flare up like that on people. There's no way that God could use somebody like me. It's exactly what Satan would have you to believe, right? But you know what? If God couldn't use timid people, and he couldn't use cowardly people, and he couldn't use people that were angry and people that flew off the handle, I don't think he'd have anybody left to use, would he? I don't think there'd be anybody left who wouldn't be like, well, okay, well, there's another person over there that doesn't fit in one of those categories. There'd be an empty chair over there, right? God uses all of those people. And even a man like Samson, who was full of himself, he was able to use him to deliver the people of Israel. Use him for the glory of God. We're going to talk about Samson tonight. I think this is kind of fitting because the Bible series being on the History Channel, I think people have some of that stuff fresh in their mind. They're thinking about it. Maybe there's some stuff in there you didn't understand or you didn't have a clue. We're going to try. Some of it's kind of crazy. I'll admit that. But we're going to try to work our way through the story and help you to see more about the character of this man, Samson. If you will, turn in your Bible to Judges, chapter 13. We're going to start with another very familiar phrase that we saw 2 weeks ago, which is, "And the people of Israel, again, did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So he gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. So here God has brought judgment on his people again. He says, okay, you've done what is wrong, you're not doing what is right, so I got to bring the Philistines in now to whip up on you a little bit, to beat you down, to get you back in line. Then what happens? The angel of the Lord shows up again. And he shows up to this man named Manoah, and he says, all right, look, here's the deal. Your wife has never had a child. She's about to have a child. But this kid's going to be different. And because this kid is different, he's going to be a Nazarite. And because he's going to be a Nazarite, we got to start off like while he's still in the womb, while he's still in the mother's stomach, we got to make sure that we do the right stuff. She is not to drink of alcohol while she's pregnant with him. And when the baby is born, because he's going to be a Nazarite, there's a few things that have to be different about him. He has to kind of be set apart, really, to be set aside, to kind of be different than everybody else. Number one is he's not supposed to drink alcohol. Does Samson drink alcohol? Yeah. He broke that one pretty quick-like. He's not supposed to touch a dead body. Did he break that one? Yeah, we're going to see that in a little bit, too. And then finally, what was he not supposed to do? What was the big deal about Samson? In order to keep his strength, he couldn't do what? Cut his hair, right? Yeah, you guys have been learning this since kindergarten and you know, Bible school and all that kind of stuff way back when you were a little kid. So he was supposed to be be different. He's supposed to look different. He's supposed to act different. Everything's supposed to be different about him because he's going to be a Nazarite. He's going to be used for the Lord. He said, this kid's going to be different. And he is. He's born. And they don't cut his hair. And he's really strong. And he's full of confidence because he's able to like whip up on everybody. But he's got a weakness too. He's got a weakness. Somebody just gave me a yeah. His weakness was Philistine women, or women in general, maybe. He had a weakness for the bad girls. You know? I don't know how else to phrase that, but he did. He had a weakness for the bad girls, the Philistine women. And his parents are like, man, this is not good. This is really, really not good. You're supposed to be a Nazarite. The Bible explicitly back in the book of Deuteronomy says you cannot marry a Nazarite woman. And he says, hey, I know what I want to do. I want to marry a Nazarite woman. And his parents are going, no, this is bad. This is really not good. You don't need to do this. And he goes, you know what? I'm doing it anyway. Has anybody in here ever been in that situation? Your parents said, man, this is a bad idea. You probably don't need to go there. I'm trying to help you out. I'm trying to show you that what you're doing is not a good idea. And you go, you know what? I got this, Mom. I got this, Dad. I know. Look, I know all the stuff you're worried about. But you don't have to worry about me. I got this, man. I got this. Everything that you think is going, that's not going to happen. See, this is going to be different. Because this guy is different. Why are y'all laughing so hard? Or this girl is different. She is not what you think she is. I know what you're thinking. Okay, I know. But that is not the case here. You are all wrong. You're dead wrong. It's not that way. Mm-hmm. His parents tried to tell him. The godly people, the angel of the Lord came to him, said, you're going to have a Nazarite kid. You know, do all this. Don't cut his hair. You know, don't be drinking, don't let him drink, don't let him touch dead bodies. And they're like, okay, we're doing all this stuff. And then he grows up to be this Brutus-looking guy, and he's like, I'm going to do my own thing, man. I got strength and power. I got strength over everything. Listen to your mama. That's all I can tell you. Listen to your mama. Right, Cedric? Listen to your mama. Now, here's what happens. He goes and he says, I'm going to marry this Nazarite woman. He says, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to go and I'm going to marry her. And as he's going through the betrothal period and he's hanging out and stuff, and one day he's walking up on this lion. He gets attacked. They have like mountain lions and stuff back in this day, and he gets attacked by this lion, and he rips it to shreds because he's so strong. He's like manly, so he rips it to shreds, and it's laying over there and it's dead. And you know, this is just feeding his ego. Hey, I just killed a lion. Things are all good. Well, he comes back a little bit later, and the lion, instead of like being full of maggots and stuff, which he figures it's probably got all kinds of, he finds it like some bees have set up residence inside this lion and they're making honey. So, what does he do? Well, he does what he's not supposed to do, and he goes and touches the dead body of this lion. And he sticks his hand inside and gets some of the honey. And this was really even bad. I mean, his parents know what he's not supposed to do. He even goes back and offers them some of the honey, telling them where it came from. Like, here, well, you'll try some. This is really sweet. This is really good. And they're like, man, you're not supposed to be doing this. But he's not listening to mama. And he's doing his own thing because he's cocky and he's full of himself. And he's going to end up paying for it later. Trust me. Trust me. But he does. He decides to marry this Philistine woman. And he has, like, his best men that are in his wedding turn out to be 30 Philistine men. So not only is he marrying a Philistine woman, his best men are Philistine spies, basically. People, they're probably trying to keep an eye on him and watch him and make sure that he's not doing anything that he shouldn't be doing. And you remember, he's the enemy. He's an Israelite. So he's like, They got to keep an eye on him, make sure he's not scheming something. Well, they go into this, it says for 7 days, they have like this wedding ceremony. And they're partying it up, and it's basically like a drunken brawl, and they're having a good time, and most likely Samson's drunk, and he says to them, hey, I got a riddle for you. I got a riddle for you, and if you tell me the answer to this riddle, I'll give you 30 linen clothes, changes of clothes. That's what the bet will be. And if you don't get it right in 7 days, then you got to give me 30 changes of linen clothes, okay? I know this sounds weird to us. I like linen. I don't know if it'd be worth, you know, this kind of a struggle over, but he says, hey, you answer this riddle in 7 days, and here's what you'll get. So it says in verse 14, Judges chapter 14, verse 14, it says, and he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. Now he's talking about this lion that he killed, that the bees had set up residence in there, and they're making honey, and he ate the honey. So they're trying to figure out, what the crap is he talking about? I don't understand. What does this riddle mean? You know, they're trying to figure it out, and they get frustrated. These 30 men get really, really frustrated, and they go to his wife, and they say, you know what? If you don't tell us what this riddle means, we're going to burn you. And they're not talking about with a curling iron or a branding iron or nothing like that. We're going to burn you. We're going to set you on fire. And not only that, we're going to set your parents' house on fire and all your family in it if you don't tell us the answer to this riddle. Well, of course, she tells them. She tells them what the answer is. And they come back and say, ah, see, Samson, we got you on this one. Here's the deal. And they tell him about this lion and how he ate the honey out of it and all this kind of stuff. And he gets infuriated. Samson's common response to everything, man, he's just mad. And he goes and he walks like 23 miles. I mean, this is a big cooling off period for him. He gets so mad, he walks 23 miles. And of course, to get the 30 changes of clothes that he's supposed to bring back to these guys because they got the riddle right, he kills 30 men to get them. And then he brings back the clothes, and he comes back, and with Samson, he's just like one strike after another, after another, after another. Sometimes I think, man, that's me, you know. But Samson, he comes back, and he's like, okay, here you go, guys. And he goes back to the father-in-law's house, and what's happened? Well, the father-in-law said, man, I thought she was gone. I don't know how to tell you this, but I kind of gave your wife-to-be. I kind of gave her to your friend. I hope it didn't really bother you so much, but I kind of gave her to somebody else. I mean, Samson didn't even like brought a goat back as like a peace offering. Say, hey, I'm back. Everybody's happy to see me. And he goes back, and his wife-to-be has been given away to his friend. Ugh. Anybody here think Samson gets angry about that? Yeah. Yeah, he gets angry. He gets real angry. And one of the things he does is he, like, takes these foxes, like 300 of them, and in pairs, he ties their tails together, and he lights their tails on fire, and they go running through the wheat fields, burning up the wheat fields. The Philistine wheat fields are destroyed. Their vineyards are destroyed. All of the ways that they make money and make food and all that kind of stuff, it gets destroyed. And Samson, just because of his anger, that's what he did, man. He just said, you know what? I'm angry, so this is the way I'm going to take it out. Fits of rage, right? Well, the Philistines find out about it. And they figure out that Samson's the cause and he's the reason. So what do? They blame the father-in-law, the one that gave the wife-to-be, gave her away to his friend. They blame him. And they say, you know what we're going to do to you? We're going to burn you. We're going to burn your daughters too. And that's what ends up happening. I mean, I know it's a crazy story, but that's exactly what ends up happening. And Samson, once again, goes into a fits of rage and starts killing people. Philistines in particular. I mean, God empowers him to to cast judgment on the Philistines by allowing him this great strength to just, it says to, that he beats up on them, he destroys them hip and thigh, which is just mean, it's a colloquialism that means from top to bottom, just like taking them out. This guy that is to be used of God, he's got these fits of anger and fits of rage. And you think, man, how can God use somebody like that? How can God use somebody like that? Well, he kind of runs off to hide after he's taken out a whole bunch of them. And the Philistines, they go to the Israelites and they go to the army and they say, you know what? We want Samson. And you better bring him to us because we want to do to him what he has done to the Philistines. And they say, look, we don't have him. We ain't got him. He ain't here. I said, well, you know what? If we can't take it out on him, we're going to take it out on you, so you better go find him. So that's what they do. They get 3,000 of the Israelite army, and they go and they try to find him, and he's like hidden in a cave. I said, man, you got to come back. They convince him somehow that he's got to come back. He's got to turn himself over to the Philistines, or else they're going to kill the Israelites. And he doesn't really want that. He doesn't want the Israelites hurt, so he goes back. And what's interesting is it says that they've got some new ropes that they're going to tie him up with. They think that, you know, they can tie him up now. So they've got some new ropes, and they go and try to bring him back with those new ropes. It says in Judges chapter 15, they bring him back to the Philistines. And the Philistines came shouting to meet him. In Judges 15, verse 14, it says, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that has caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. And he saw a fresh jawbone of a donkey. And he put out his hand and took it, and with it he struck 1,000 men. So here you got Samson. They brought him back to the Philistines, and they start screaming at him, and he goes into another fit of rage, right? And it says that those new ropes that they tried to bind him up with, they said it's like they just burned up. And the things they had tying up his arms, they just melted away. And here he is. He picks up the closest thing to him. It's just a jawbone of a donkey. And he kills 1,000 of the Philistines with the donkey's jawbone. He's a pretty bad dude, right? You think, man, this is awesome. He's wiping out the Philistines. Great. This is fantastic. He's destroying the Philistines who are causing pain and suffering for the Israelite army. And even though he was doing a good thing, the problem was his heart. The problem with Samson was his heart and the fact that he was full of himself and he was full of his own pride and ego. And even though it looked like he was doing a good thing, the problem was him. I hope that you see that. I hope that you see that even though that Samson was destroying this enemy army, he was doing it with the wrong heart. And you can see that in what he says. What happens here in chapter 15? In verse 16 it says, and Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey have I struck down 1,000 men. Now, what is the most important piece of that whole verse there? What is the most important word in that whole verse? It is one letter, one single isolated letter. It is I. He said, I struck down 1,000 men. You know what Samson's biggest problem was? The eye. You know what happened to Samson at the end? They gouged out his eyes. It was the eye. That was Samson's problem. It was him. It was the inside of him. And for God to use him effectively, for God to actually be able to mold him and shape him, for his glory, what happened is Samson had to be humbled by God. He had to be humbled by God. And though nobody else physically could humble Samson because he was too strong and too fierce and too mighty of a warrior, God had to do it. God had to do it in a different way. And you know what he did? He made him thirsty. He made him thirsty. And this is the kind of thirst that you and I probably have never experienced. This is the kind of thirst that Jesus would have experienced on the cross. I mean, a near-death kind of dehydration to the point where you just would take anything to drink that you could possibly get. God put that kind of thirst on him. Made him thirsty. Making him thirsty made him humble. I want you to listen to what it says. In verse 18 of chapter 15, it says, "And he was very thirsty." And what's the next thing it says? "And he called upon the Lord." He was thirsty and he called upon the Lord. God had humbled him. He said, "You know what? The Lord, he is my sustenance. He is the one that gives me everything that I need. And when I'm in this trouble, when I'm in this pain that nothing else can fix, the Lord is the answer." He says, "You have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant." Okay, see what's happening here? All of a sudden, he's gone from saying, "I struck down 1,000 men," to now all of a sudden he's saying, "You have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant." It sounds like a completely different, transformed man, does it not? He says, "And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" I love what God does here. Verse 19, it says, "And God split open a hollow place, that is at Lehi, and the water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived." He opened a rock. Water poured out from a rock. Can you think of anybody else who felt like they were wandering around, thinking like God had deserted them, searching, looking, dying of thirst, saying, "God, you have just delivered us out of the hands of one, and now we've come out here to the middle of nowhere to thirst to death"? Can you think of any other time when this has happened in biblical history? Yeah. Yeah. You remember the children of Israel coming out of Egypt? And they just crossed over, and God has delivered them from Pharaoh's army, and they've been crushed by the sea. And then they go, "Okay, great, we've been delivered. Now we're going to die of thirst. You brought us out here in the wilderness to die of thirst." It's how God works. It's how God humbles us. It's how God brings us to our knees. He will do whatever it takes to bring you to your knees. He will take a strong man and make you weak, only so he can make you strong again. That's just the way he operates. Because that is the only way that you become a humble servant. You have to be weak before you can be made strong. Because you have to follow the guidance of the one who gives the strength. If you think it comes from you, then you are of no use to God. If you think it comes from God, then you can do anything through him who strengthens you. But he'll do whatever it takes. Oh, don't get me wrong. He will do whatever it takes to make you weak. And you say, "Kenny, that's a little scary." You better believe it is scary. It scares me to death. I can tell you in my own life, there's been times where God has had to humble me and bring me to my knees so that I would be an obedient servant and I would understand the gravity of what he was trying to do in my life. Part of that is some of that happened through the death of my daughter. I thought that I had everything going right, and I thought, "Man, I got this great job, and things are going good," and then all of a sudden, boom, everything changed in an instant. I thought I was doing all the right things, and I didn't realize that all good gifts come from God. And it was nothing that I had ever done, and it was all from him. And the minute you start to think that it comes from you, you better watch out, and you better be very afraid. You better be very afraid. The first message I ever preached, just from a Sunday night crowd here at Hillcrest Baptist Church, Kenneth never got to see me preach, but she got to see me preach on video. I showed her the video of me getting to preach my very first sermon. She died before I preached my second. But I was up there, and God, just I'd humbled myself before God because I was scared out of my mind to be preaching in front of 700 people. And the closest thing I'd done to that is maybe talking in a Sunday school class to 40 people. And I got up there, and I preached my heart out, and people were really in tune with the message, and they really connected with what I was saying because it came from my heart, and God was able to use me because I was a humble servant before Him. I just let Him, I was an empty vessel, and I let Him use me in whatever way He saw fit. And I'm not saying this boastfully because it came from God, but it was good. It went well. People were encouraged by it. You know what happened? I got full of myself and thought that I had done something. I thought, man, I got this. I can do this Sunday in and Sunday out. It is not a problem at all for me to get up there. I'll tell a few funny stories, then I'll end it with some words that rhyme, and then people will be like, yes, that's a good sermon. Yes, God was able to use you. Oh, mighty man of valor. Yeah. Wrong. As soon as you start to think that stuff about yourself and you think that it has something to do with you, you will fall flat on your face because God has to have you dependent on Him and not dependent on yourself. Has to. I got up there my second sermon. I looked at my notes. I had no idea what they said. Some of y'all probably don't remember this message because it was only 8 minutes long. I got up there and preached everything I knew in 8 minutes on this particular passage, and it was about Abraham and Isaac, and I got up there and said everything I knew in 8 minutes, and I sat back down. It was so bad that Todd came up to the pulpit and said, what a powerful message. Come up here and hug Kenny's neck and tell him how much you appreciate him. You know, it's one of those kind of things where he just felt bad for me. Probably none of y'all remember it. I will remember it for the rest of my life because I made a promise. It was so bad that Brother Rick was out of town. He called me that night to say, hey, man, how did it go? He called me on my cell phone. I said, well, Brother Rick, I'll be honest with you. I don't feel like I did the best job I could have. I don't feel like I was prepared in the way that I could have been. And I wasn't talking about having read or studied or all that stuff. I'm talking about spiritually I was not prepared to do what God had called me to do. And he said, well, that's what makes you humble and more prepared the next time, right? I said, you're absolutely right, Brother Rick. And I have never forgotten that sermon, and I have made a commitment to myself that I will not be in that spiritual condition before I preach or teach God's word. I will be humble before God and let Him pour through me because I am an empty vessel. God will do whatever it takes to humble you, and He did that with Samson. And we'll go through the rest of this kind of quick-like. But from that point on, he delivered, it says in verse 20, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So what this means is he delivered Israel in the days of the Philistines. He delivered them for 20 years. And for 20 years, they were okay. And then all of a sudden, Samson, we catch up with him, and he's with a prostitute. All right, well, thanks, Kenny. It just went from G-rated to PG-13. He's with a prostitute. And the Philistines get word of this. And they said, we're going to attack him. We're going to get him. We're going to get this guy finally. It says, let us wait until the light of morning, then we will kill him. But Samson lay until midnight. And at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors and the gate of the city and two posts and pulled them up. Bar and all, and he put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of a hill that was in front of Hebron. You know how far away that is? That's like over 30 miles away. Another fit of rage by the guy we know that is known for his calm demeanor, right? He tears up the gates and he takes them over 30 miles away to Hebron and puts them up on a hill. Just another example of how Samson was this angry man who, you know, by the world standards, probably didn't deserve to be used of God. He had faults and he had flaws. And one of the things that he did is he met this lady named Delilah. Okay, we all are familiar with this part of the story more so than the first part. She was a Philistine woman. And it says that the amount of silver that they offered her in order to trick Samson, she had to seduce him and tease him and try to figure out how he was so strong. We know this story. And she kept bugging him and asking him. It says she pressed him day after day after day to tell her how he was so strong, what made him so strong. And for a few times, he kind of threw her off the trail and told her some phony stories. But finally, he just said, okay, all right, I'll tell you. And Delilah, she was given, like, according to the calculations, how much this would have been equivalent to 550 years worth of a man's salary. Now, before you go and start looking at Delilah in a bad way, I want you to remember that 550 years worth of salary, that's a good chunk of change, y'all. If they had put that big hunk of silver down in front of me, I'd have been going, yeah, that's a lot of money. That right there is a lot of money. That could set me up pretty good. I could buy that nice chariot I've always been wanting, you know. Buy that nice thatch roof house, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, it won't be worth anything once I die and I'm face to face with Satan. But still, like for right now, it's like, man, that's a lot of money. So she keeps pressing him. She keeps pushing him. Finally, he tells her, he says, okay, here's the deal. Here's the deal. If you cut my hair, I'm done for. I've had it. Of course, you know, 550 years worth of salary. She says, somebody hand me the scissors. And she cuts his hair, and they come in, and it says that he really doesn't even know that the strength has left him. When the soldiers come in to get him, he doesn't even know that the strength has left him. So I'm sure that he's like, man, it's going to be like any other time. Give me a jawbone or whatever, man. I'm going to whip these guys. And all of a sudden he's like, hey, something ain't right. Something's not right. And of course, I'm sure he had to go back in his mind to him telling Delilah what his weakness was. I imagine that he probably had in his mind thinking about, you know what, maybe mom and dad were right. Maybe they did know what was best when they said, stay away from the Philistine women. This is not a good thing for you. Probably did have those thoughts that ran through his mind. Says, man, I've messed up. Man, I've taken too many steps the wrong direction now. I don't know if there's any coming back for me. I don't know if there's any chance that God will be able to use me now. I've fallen in the hands of the Philistines because of my weakness for women, for the wrong women. And he did it purely superficially. I mean, it says literally that they were pleasing to his eye. It was not like he fell in love with their heart or something like that. It was strictly with his eyes, superficial love with his eye. And it became his demise. And here he is, he's let his eyes control his life. And now what happens is they gouge out his eyes. They take away his eyes. They capture him and take away his eyes. And you're probably thinking, okay, so he's lost all of his strength. He doesn't have any eyes. How in the world could this man be used of God now? He can't even see his enemy, much less defeat them with his strength. We know how the story ends. In chapter 16, it says in verse 27, now the house was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson entertained. They were having this big celebration to their god Dagon, and they brought him in kind of as entertainment to point fingers at him and laugh at him and mock him and all this kind of stuff. And they're all in there rejoicing and having a good time and living it up and all that. And what happens? Samson, who is now a humble servant of the Lord, thinks he's probably of no use to God. He cries out one last time to his Lord, and he says this in verse 28. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me. And please strengthen me only this once. O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one, his left hand on the other. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he bowed up with all his strength, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people who were in it. This is what happened. This man was strong. This man could do anything with his strength. He had a flaw. And his sinful nature kind of led him away from his true calling and what he could have been. He messed up a lot. He messed up a whole lot. But God humbled him. And God did what it took to make him a servant. He made him weak so that he could make him strong. You see, in our weakness, Christ's strength is revealed. In our weakness, God's perfect strength is revealed. You know what needs to happen in here? Some people probably need to humble themselves before God. You need to fall on your face before God and say, "Lord, I've been too full of my own self. I've been too full of my own ways. I've been thinking I've been doing this on my own, and I haven't been giving you the credit like I should have been." And you say, "Well, that's not me. I'm not like that." I can't tell you how many prayer requests I get for people that say, "Man, pray for finals. Finals are killing me. I don't know if I'll make it through finals. I don't know if I'll live through finals. Pray for everybody that's going through finals." And we do. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with lifting up people that are struggling and dealing with all the tough stuff that come with finals. But the Bible says in Matthew 5:16, it says this. It says, "Let your good deeds shine before men, so they may glorify your Father who is in heaven." I don't see a whole lot of people getting on Facebook, getting on Twitter going, "God, I give God the glory because He's the one that brought me through this. He's the one that helped me to do the best I can in this life for His glory." You know what I see a lot of people saying? "I did this. I did that. It was me that got this GPA. It was me that made this grade." I see a lot of that. Jesus had an encounter with these lepers. And he healed them. He told them, "You're healed, go your way." And only one of them came back to say thank you. Only one of them came back to acknowledge that the Lord was the reason that they were healed. I see very few people acknowledging that Christ is the reason they are the way they are. And I hope you get past that on your own before God has to humble you to recognize that all good gifts come from Him. The bad things and the good things, they all come from Him. And you need to acknowledge that. And you need to realize that you don't have any strength on your own. That it all comes from the God that loves you. Let me pray and we'll have a time of invitation. Father, thank you so much, Lord, for this example of a man who was strong, physically strong, Lord, but maybe weak in his heart. God, and how you had to crush his heart and how you had to crush his spirit in order for him to be made strong again. You had to make him weak so he could be made strong again. I pray for someone in here, Lord, that needs to be made weak. Lord, I beg you, as difficult as it may be, for whatever you've got to do in their lives to make them weak, to humble them before you, God, I ask you to do that. Lord, I know for myself, it took a lot of heartache and a lot of pain. Lord, but my prayer is that everybody that sees me knows that I do what I do for your glory, and that none of what I do comes from me. It only comes from you. I pray that my light shines before men so that it glorifies you. God, I beg you that no one sees me as they see this word, God, that they only see you and they only see the sacrifice of the cross and how Jesus, as he was on the cross, he emptied himself, God, so that we could be made strong through his sacrifice, through what he did. God, I know that when I surrendered my heart and life to you, when I gave my heart to Jesus Christ, I know that I had to be made weak. I know that I had to be pulverized and ground to powder, God, for one reason and for one reason only, so that I could be made strong. I could be made perfect in your love. God, help us to recognize what we have to do in order to be able to be used of you. God, there's been so many times where we think that we've done it ourselves. God, that is not true. God, all the glory belongs to you. All of it, Lord. God, I don't want to be in that 90% that doesn't go and say thank you for what you have done in my life. God, I want to be the one that comes back and says, Jesus Christ is the one who healed me. Jesus Christ is the one who made me perfect. God, whatever you have to do to awaken my soul to that, God, I pray that you would do it tonight. Father, thank you so much for how you have penetrated us with this word. I know that it will not leave void, and I praise your name for that. Be glorified now as we humble ourselves before you. In Jesus' name, amen.